heard Ferguson.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I like a good time. I like to have a party.
I know you do.
It's Dirty's Daily, presented by Mokarum Injury Lawyers.
Mokarum Injury Lawyers, hard as hell to say, easy to dial. 281-222-2222. Also, big shout out to everybody out there listening, man. The Audacy app is the way to go. AUDACY. Download that app ASAP. Keep it on your hip and take us any and everywhere that you go. We got a big day rolling here on The Drive on Sports Radio 610. There's a little breaking news popping. Tyler hit earlier. TJ Watt, Pittsburgh Steeler edge rusher. He hit them Steelers over the head with his new contract, y'all. Highest paid non-quarterback in football. 3 years, $123 million. $108 million guaranteed. That's $41 million per year on average there. That is the highest paid non-quarterback. That's $1 million more per year than Myles Garrett. We'll be cussing and discussing that, as well as the Astros crank up tomorrow. And what I believe, and I'll speak for my man Ron and Show Hughley here, is what we believe is the most important series of the season. And there's already a head-scratching decision that's been made there by the organization. We'll tell you about that later in the show as well. But we're inside a week of go time in Houston with the Texans training camp cranking up. Next week, the players report Tuesday. They start practice Wednesday. And for me and for a lot of folks, I guarantee you for D'Amico Ryans, the focus is squarely on the O-line and fixing the O-line. One, you're not going to win games. Damn sure not going to improve on 10 games a year and go into the second round of the playoffs. And damn sure not going to improve beyond that if your O-line isn't significantly better running the football and damn sure protecting the quarterback. But let's be honest. You got a guy back there taking snaps that you're going to pay $60 million to per year. He is the face of your franchise, at least on the offensive side of the ball. You're fixing to break him off, and you better learn how to protect him. You better make it a priority.
God bless, brother.
There's going to be no excuse for not protecting C.J. Stroud again. There's going to be no excuse for not fixing the offensive line problems that really ultimately ended your season last year, if we're being honest. And you got lucky. You got out of there without C.J. Stroud getting injured more significantly than he was. So the focus during training camp is going to be solely on the offensive line. There's no doubt about that. We've been discussing the O-line on an individual basis, individual position basis this week, and we hit the centers yesterday. And I think the center position is interesting. I love what the Texans are doing at the center position, by the way. I love it even more after hearing this audio that I'm going to play for you. But it's interesting because you got Jarrett Patterson, who was your best center last year, and the team played not great, but better. The offensive unit played better when he was at the center position. You also have Juice Scruggs, who is a former second-round pick who you moved up in the draft to get, played at Penn State, big-time center. By the way, Jarrett Patterson came out of Notre Dame. You got some guys that played in really, really good college programs there, played a lot of football. And I don't think many people expected the Texans to pick up a center that the New England Patriots decided they no longer wanted to keep in their organization, so they released him. Well, the Texans scoop him up. Not only do they scoop him up, they Kamari Lassiter his ass. They give him the gig. We go over to watch OTAs. I thought it was just a rotational deal, Ron. No, it ain't no rotational deal. He's getting.
It was a rotational deal of his ass out there rotationally every day first.
He was first in that rotation every day. Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's fascinating. It's interesting to see a guy like that gets picked up off the streets and he immediately gets the job in an organization that typically is, hey, we're going to create competition. And look, I think there's competition there. I'm not saying that Jake Andrews is definitely the center for the Houston Texans, but he's damn sure being treated as the center. And we talked about it yesterday, and there's one of two things going on. One, it is a communication tool here. He knows the system. He's been in the system. He can communicate the system better than anybody else, which allows the offensive team, the offensive unit as a group, to practice and rep plays at a different level, right? And at a different pace and at a higher quality. And so is it just a communication play? Or is Jake Andrews, again, a guy that a rebuilding organization in New England decided to let loose of, is he really that much better than the other centers that the Texans have on the roster? Again, Juice Scruggs and Jarrett Patterson. I think either way it goes, it's a huge plus, right? Hopefully both, to be honest with you, Ron. Hopefully he's a better communicator as well as a physically more gifted offensive lineman than the other guys. Here's the reality of it is I love the thought because this is next level stuff. Like to me, and it may not seem like it is, but there's a lot of organizations and there's a lot of coaching staffs that would go with the guy that they drafted in the second round that was young and maybe a little bit more physically gifted. There's a lot of coaching staffs that wouldn't think it through enough to go, if we can get our center communicating at a higher level, we can spend 2 months in OTAs and minicamps getting significantly better work than if we try to force the center to learn an offense and communicate the offense. So I love what they're doing. Yesterday we kind of left that conversation floating out there because we didn't know the answer. Today we know the damn answer. Here is Jake Andrews, and he's talking about his particular familiarity with the system that's being installed and the advantages of him being able to communicate it.
For me, it's easier because I ran this system, exact system, different verbiage, in college my senior year. Sure. My rookie year when I was in New England, I ran the same thing with Bill O'Brien.
Yep.
And so for me, it's been pretty easy because I can communicate with guys who are seeing this stuff for the first time.
Right.
And, you know, it's easy for me to say, hey, well, you know, we used to do it this way. And I know what Cole wants, Popovich. Yep. I know what he wants. I know what he wants stuff to look like. And so maybe we didn't get to it in a meeting. Maybe we didn't get to talk about it during the walkthrough. But when we get out there and I'm talking to guys about stuff in the locker room, I can let them know, like, hey, let's try this differently. Yep. Hey, oh, he wants this to look like that when you've got, you know, X, Y, Z out there in front of you.
That is worth $1 million, y'all. Let's put it in football terms. That's worth $40 million a year. I don't suggest you pay him that. I'm saying that is an extremely valuable asset for the Texans to have, even if he's not your most gifted player, and it's just a tool that's going to be used in OTAs, minicamp, and even through training camp. Because look, the truth of the matter is, Jarrett Patterson would be the guy that I expected to be the center. He's still getting as many reps as he would get.
Even over Scruggs? Over Juice?
Yeah. I think it's obvious. I mean, they're just lining guys up year in, year out that are obviously better communicators than Juice. I think Juice is a better guard. We'll see what happens there. But nonetheless, I don't, Jarrett is still getting reps. Other guys are still getting the same amount of reps that they would get. The Texans have just put themselves in a position where communication is not an issue in OTAs and minicamp, not with your first unit, right? Not with your first unit. And I love the sense of urgency here of, hey, we don't have time to sit around and we're going to work our install at the pace that Jarrett Patterson or even Juice Scruggs can handle it. No, we're going to go get a guy. We're going to bring him in here that can help us install this thing at warp speed kind of deal. And it sounds like that's what Jake Andrews is precisely. Now, he may be better than that and be the true blue center that's head over heels better than everybody else, but he is definitely a weapon that they're using to install this offense throughout the offseason. Now, the other thing I love about that, Ron, is because my man don't lack confidence.
He sounds like a coach almost.
My man, I know exactly what Cole Popovich wants.
I know what he wants.
And if we're at the line of scrimmage and we're having trouble getting to something versus a certain look, I know what he wants this thing to look like versus that look. So y'all shut the hell up and do what I say.
You know, shoot, this is Cole's first year. This is Cole's first year being a – you already know.
That is an extremely powerful tool, an extremely valuable tool, even if we break it down to – The only thing he's bringing to the table is an off-season install weapon. It's worth its weight in gold. Now, if he ends up being the guy that wins the job and nobody can catch up with him and surpass him from a overall play standpoint, then he'll be the guy. I'm not worried one bit about the center's ability to play the game at an elite level in terms of tangibles. Like, I don't need to be this guy to be the biggest, baddest, strongest, quickest, you know, a guy that can move mass. Now, it's nice if he can, but I don't need that guy, my center, to be that guy. 99.9% of the time, my center is either going to be helping a guard or a guard is going to be helping him. So, again, very easy to cover up for a lack of tangible ability, physical ability. In fact, the ability to play the game between the ears and communicate the game is significantly more valuable at that position than the tangible part of it. So I love what the Texans are doing there with their center. You can argue that's the most important thing that they've got. That's the biggest thing that they've got to get right this offseason, right, is that communication piece at the center position. Because we've talked a lot, Ron, about C.J. Stroud being the guy that is going to have more control and command. And that's great. But the best case scenario for C.J. Stroud is that he and his center see the game through the same lens, and there is a confidence and trust there that C.J. Stroud's got to correct him maybe once or twice a game.
I know you have been in this situation as a quarterback with centers and high-level college football in the NFL. You've watched it. You understand the importance of it. My one concern would be, I just hope, I'm not saying they are, but I just hope they're not overvaluing his ability to communicate and know the system as well as he does, over the fact of is he better than those guys? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's great to know the system until, you know, you play the Titans and they got just Jeffrey Simmons and that other big fella coming up.
Sweat
until you play, you know, the week one and they slide Versen on the inside and do some. Like, that's just my thing, is I understand the value of importance, but I also, like, Shaq Mason, I think, was sharp and knew the game, but he couldn't play anymore.
Right.
And I just hope there is at least a fine line between them.
Well, if Jake is that bad, right, if he's at a point where, and I don't know if he is or he isn't, but if Jake is at a point where, hey, man, he got released in New England for a reason. He just doesn't have it. He can't play. He never could. He just hung on as long as he could. You know, he ran that Clint Sterner journey through the NFL. Then I would think that at some point those other guys are going to catch up and take over and be the starting center. Either way it goes, I think as a Texans fan, we're in a really, really good spot. I like what they're doing at the center position. Would I have liked for them to sign one of the best centers in football that was available? Yeah, sure, absolutely. But they didn't do that. They went a different route. I like this approach to fixing the offensive line. If they can't communicate, I don't give a damn how good you are. You can have Laremy Tunsil out there at left tackle, and at the end of the day, you're going to have poor O-line play. Right. The truth of the matter is, you got to have a guy that can communicate so that all five guys, really, if we're being honest, six counting the tight end, seven counting the quarterback, eight counting the running back. All of those guys need to be able to hear what's going on, trust what's going on, and not second guess it. Just go out there and execute whatever the hell they're trying to execute. Right. We saw what second guessing and not knowing who the hell you have. We saw what that looks like. Right. Sometimes it's all right. Some opponents, you're all right. But more times than not, it's going to fail you miserably and your quarterback's going to get killed. And so I like what they're doing. That wasn't all that Jake Andrews said. Real quick, Tyler, here's Jake Andrews talking about the brand of offensive line, if you will, that the Texans plan to have this year.
The ball is going to be run. I tell you that much. We're going to run the football. Taylor's doing a good job with putting all that stuff together. We're going to protect CJ or whoever's back there. Try to make it us five up front. We're going to try to make it our life's work to not have anybody in his lap or touching him at all. We're going to pound the rock and we're going to air it out. We're going to keep people on their toes and we're going to play tough physical football. And people are going to know when they wake up on Monday morning that they just got done playing the Houston Texans.
I love we're gonna keep people out of the quarterback's lap. Sounds simple, but we didn't hear enough of that last year as everybody was fighting to sit in CJ's lap.
I just want to see it.
CJ was like Santa Claus. They were lining up to sit in his lap.
Hell yeah. I just want to see it. Good to hear it.
It's talking season, Ron.
Hey, talking. I just want to see it. What we heard, similar things from Titus Howard. Gonna bust you in the mouth. Lincoln Tomlinson said a little similar thing. And then, show me, man.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see it. Let's see that. Because that is exactly what they
That's
need.
That's where you from. No show me state.
You know it, man. That man said, we're going to run the ball. We're going to keep him out of your lap. And you're going to know that you played the Houston Texans. Let's see it, baby. See it. Yeah. Oh, that make you run man. Through a wall? That make you believe in this O-line now? Let's see. All right, coming up. Astros second half thoughts. Second half thoughts as things get started tomorrow. Second half thoughts. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
Some news out of the NBA world. Very interesting, but I guess now if you listen to some of the things reported, this is from Shams Bomb. I felt like we said something else.
Sham Bomb?
Yeah, Shams Bomb or whatever. Shams, I can't remember. Shams Bomb, and then I think we have one for just in case it was Shams. I can't remember what it was. But,
I don't remember.
But Shams Charania of ESPN, breaking news, 9-time NBA All-Star Damian Lillard is finalizing a 3-year, $42 million contract to return to the Portland Trail Blazers. Sources tell ESPN, deal is expected to include a player option in 27-28 and a no-trade clause, a storybook reunion home for the 35-year-old. That's interesting. So he got bought out by the Bucks, and he's been training in Portland, and he's now the opportunity to choose anywhere he wants to go. Anywhere he wants to go. A lot of people speculated that Golden State would be a spot. People thought other contenders would be a spot. Miami, maybe a spot. But he is leaving the Bucks and now choosing to stay. Now, he does live there. Obviously, he played several years in Portland. But he is deciding to stay in Portland, who is nowhere near anywhere close to being any kind of contender. Interesting decision. Clearly, this isn't about a championship. This is about being comfortable and being at the crib.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times guys get criticized for making these kind of decisions, and in reality, I can understand it. I mean, I'd imagine that he is exhausted over the last couple of years of trying to chase that championship of what they went through. Watched coaches get fired and watched it, you know, the injury, obviously. But before
Milwaukee
that,
probably was tough.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is probably one of those, like, realizing real quick, hey, man, the grass ain't always greener on the other side. And I don't know his family situation. I don't know what he's got going on.
Well, that's the other thing. So been reported that over the last year or so, it's kind of been some up and down issues within his family life.
Yep.
And when he got injured with the Achilles, he had wanted to go back to Portland to train to be closer to family because there were some reportedly some things happening, and Milwaukee wasn't really big on that. They wanted him to kind of be around so they can see him, and that kind of jump-started the buyout. And so now when you hear those reports to what you're saying, this makes even more sense.
Yeah, man, it's just, I mean, life is so much bigger than the sport. I know everybody wants to think that everybody wants your guys to act a certain way and put it as number one priority, but, boy, the reality of it is man, it's – I admire the guys. I admire the guys that hang up their cleats before they fall out of love with the sport. Or when they fall out of love is really what I meant. Not don't keep playing just for the money. And I admire guys that make decisions like this to go back and be close. You're still good enough to play. Obviously, you can make $40+ million doing it on top of what you're already making from the Milwaukee buyout. And you choose to do it closer to your family in a place you're familiar with and a place that you're comfortable. And that's a beautiful thing, man.
I mean, they got no shot.
Wonder what they promised him.
Their best player right now is Drew Holiday. Their best player. Scoot Henderson they drafted him number two, but he's kind of been slow.
Maybe Grant is Horace's son. Maybe he's a – no, it's Harvey's son. Maybe he's a little bit better, but I don't know. Yeah, they he left to go to Milwaukee. There was on that time, it was Milwaukee, Miami to go to contender, and now clearly he has said, man, it's about the home life. It's about being comfortable at the crib. And yeah, as you said, man, I respect that. Because apparently that, yeah, and I'll be damned, boy, if I'm going to go somewhere to be a contender and I'm going to go to Milwaukee, got dog, and we better be getting close. sitting out there. By the way, Portland, sneaky, a place that I've never been and I kind of want to go to. I've heard some good things about Portland. I've heard Portland's kind of like, what I've heard is Portland's kind of like the West Coast Austin. Kind of a weird, artsy place. Kind of a cool. I kind of want to see what it's like. See what old Portland is.
Yeah, I don't think I've lost anything in Portland.
I
think I'll be all right.
Run anything in Portland. All right. Text in 713-572-4610. YouTube and Twitch. Jump on this now. For you, second half, what's the biggest thing on your mind with the Astros' second half? It starts tomorrow. They start in Seattle. Brandon Walter gets the ball in game one of that series. We'll get you more on that coming up in 5 o'clock fire. But what's on your mind in the second half coming up for the Astros?
Yeah, for me, man, it's all about questions, right? Who comes back? Who comes back and how much do they help a team that's already got a five-game lead in the division? And not only who comes back, Ron, but who cools off. I mean, to me, those are the two things, right? We've been ravaged by injuries here, and we know we're going to be a significantly better team when Yordan Alvarez and Spencer Arrigetti and Jake Myers and Jeremy Pena and all these guys get back. Not to mention some of the guys the other pitchers that have been out. Not to mention how those guys will help out of the bullpen or even help in the starting rotation. When do those guys get back and how much do they help us? And then on the flip side of that, this team has they've exceeded expectations in a major way. I mean, Cam Smith, Jake Myers, hell, I don't think anybody expected Isak Paredes to be what he is right now. I mean, you've got, talk about the pitchers, Ryan Gusto and some of these other guys. I know Tyler's boy, Colton Gordon, Big C. Now the wheels have come off here the last few games, but he gave you some quality, he chewed through some quality innings early on.
I need to chew through some more.
Yeah, I need to chew through some more. I mean, you've had guys that have stepped in and not just played well, but they've stepped in and played huge in big moments to help the Astros build this lead in the division. So I think it's a two-part question for me, Ron. Who comes back? And because, I mean, anybody that comes back is going to help the team significantly. And then which of these young guys or these unexpected guys that seem to be playing out of their gourd, which one of them cools off? They're not all going to continue to play for 162. They're not all going to hit 300 for 162. They're not all going to be clutch as hell for 162. Somebody's going to cool off. Who is it? Is it the rookie Cam Smith? Right? Is it World Series MVP Jeremy Pena? Is it Jake Myers, who I can't believe how he's swinging the bat? I mean, is this the new Jake, or was that a...
Does he come back from injuries? Do all those guys come back from injuries?
Yeah,
slow?
So I think the question marks, all the different question marks that are floating around out there around how in the hell are the Astros 5 games up in the division? All those questions, I think, will be answered in the second half. We'll see what those answers are.
Yeah. To me, man, it's on the same lines, right? And I think even my thinking has to kind of go with yours of like, boy, it's hard to think that Jeremy Pena has going to play at an MVP level the entire way. We haven't seen it yet. It's hard to believe that Jake's going to play that center field and hit over 300. We haven't seen it all the way. It's hard to believe, you know, Cam Smith, is he going to get a rookie wall? Are they going to start to see, to depend on him with that? And to me, with that, to offset that, the dudes that you expected, Diaz and Walker, which one of you, it'd be great for the Astros if both, but which one of you right now are going to be the one to step up? Because right now, if you're the Astros and you're the coaching staff and everything, you got to, and I am, as someone covering them, you've got to almost start to just, I'm taking Jordan out of my mind until Jordan comes back. I'm taking him out of my mind until Jordan comes back after
the pain-free reports ain't doing nothing for you?
These stops and, no, because this is the third time. These stops and starts. And what needs to happen to offset those things and take this lineup to where you want it to be is the guy in Diaz, who finished third in the Silver Slugger Award for catchers, and then your big offseason guy last year who hit 250, 335 on base, 468 slug, 26 homers, and 84 RBIs that is nowhere in that pace right now, Christian Walker, to step up to that level. That's what you that's what you need to potentially offset that. Because I agree with you. It is hard to expect the guys to stay to the level that they've been at when we've never really seen that from them. And then I'm guessing pitchers were probably going to start approaching those guys a little differently than they had before. All right, coming up, what's on our mind? Training camp coming up. Which of the vets, the returning veterans are you watching going into training camp? You're looking at, you've got your eye on for this upcoming season. Which returning vets do you have your eye on? We'll discuss that coming up next.
Sexiest show in Houston right there, baby.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back in as we continue to ride through. As I see here on the text line, people rolling through here.
Boy, every time Ron gets quiet like that, he's found something on that text line. It's going to be a little controversial.
No, it's not controversial. Well, someone just said, it's no one expecting Pena to do this, to continue the play that he is. He's the one that I'm thinking, I don't know they can afford him to cool off. I don't know they keep it up like this, because right now I think he is a legit top five MVP candidate. But he's the one between Jake, Cam, and him, the ones that are really surprises at the plate. He's the one where I'm like, they kind of need him at the top of the order to it. Maybe not to that level, but at least to be a not to just go in the damn tank.
I don't know if he's going to keep it up at an MVP mention level. I don't say that. But he's the one to me that I believe is most likely to be like taking the next steps to be the best version of himself. I believe what we're seeing from Jeremy Pena. Like we saw it to the tune of a World Series MVP, right? It's not like we've never seen a really, really, really good Jeremy Pena. The defense was always there. The regular season slow start kind of lull thing was the issue, and now all of a sudden it looks like he's answered that issue. But if you watch, to me, if you watch, the reason Jeremy Pena is so convincing to me, there's two reasons. One is the quality at bat he's getting is significantly better than it was 2 years ago. Like he's made huge strides, and it's panned out for him going on 2 years now. Number one. Number two, I think a lot of what the value of Jeremy Pena is, he can dribble a ball to the shortstop and it's a base hit. Like he can manufacture
and then get to second.
And then steal second, right? So that's just where I was going with it. Like he doesn't have to go up there and hit a home run or double just for, you know, him to be productive. He can literally miss a ball, dribble it down the third baseline, and it end up being a hit, and he steals second. Nobody else has swung the bat. He made soft contact, and you've got a runner in scoring position. Like, that at the top of your lineup, to me, is the value of Jeremy Pena. And I just think there's – and, oh, by the way, he is swinging the bat really, really well also. So I mean, he's not completely reliant on, you know, these you know, bunt hits and his soft contact hit. He also hits with power. He also is clutch as hell. So, like, if anybody, Jeremy Pena is the one that I believe is we're looking at the more real version of who he is longer term.
He just has more ways to get you.
Absolutely. No question.
Like he's hitting for power too. He's hitting for power. He can do all of that, and so he's been doing it all as opposed to kind of Jake. He's feeling it a little bit more. And Cam, we'll see if there's an adjustment made on him. But and again, we talked about before the season, you can't be depending on a rookie like that
Now, nobody's going to tell him to stop. Text line coming through. You don't have no idea what you're going to get from Pena. Hadn't played in 2 weeks. You don't know how he's going to come back from the rib injury. Well, I mean, obviously that's fair.
Neither do you.
But I mean, I don't know if that I would sit here and say when he does return, he's about to just go into the tank. I don't know that I think that. I would hope when he gets back, obviously the Astros training staff is involved in this, but I would hope when he gets back that, you know, he can pick up close to where he left off and the rib isn't something that is a problem.
Well, look, we can have a conversation about it. The you don't know stuff is I mean, that's silly. That's silly talk, right? We don't know what Yordan Alvarez is going to do when he comes back. I mean, we don't know what Altuve is going to do in the second half of the season because he's getting a little bit older. Is he going to wear down? We don't know what anybody's going to do. Is Cam Smith going to hit that rookie wall? Is this really the Isak Paredes? Are we going to get a 40 home run season out of Isak Paredes or a 35 game home run season out of Isak Paredes? We don't know any of this stuff. But the reality of it is, I mean, I watch it. You watch it with your own eyes. We cover it all the time. I'm just more apt to believe that this is a real Jeremy Pena that we're looking at than if it's a real Cam Smith or Jake Meyer. Like I think Jake's probably between what he was and what we're watching right now. He's probably going to land somewhere in between there. I think Jeremy Pena can be one of the better leadoff hitters in the league when he comes back. Yeah, is he going to be like? Is he going to be? I'm not going to sit here and say he's going to be an MVP in the MVP conversation every year and even worth a mention. But I think he can be one of the better leadoff hitters in the game.
Yeah,
I mean, he's got a World Series MVP on his resume for crying out loud. He's really, really, really good on the defensive side of the ball.
And like you said, it looks like he's kind of coming to his own this year. This is a long stretch that he's been doing this. All right, Clint, as we head to training camp next Wednesday, we go into training camp and we've taken a look at different things this week that's kind of on our mind. Right now, I want to go to the returning vets. Is this one just like, you know, the Wayne Gretzky at the top of the list of the greatest hockey players of all time? Everybody knows what the top of the list is. Is it just Dalton Schultz or are there others? Is that the top of the list?
Damn, took my guy.
I'm not going to take that one. I'm just saying.
Keep that soft ass out of the conversation.
It's just like when you ask that question, who is the number one returning vet that you got your eye on? It feels like everyone would migrate to Dalton Schultz. Can I start before you get to Dalton?
Absolutely.
I'm going to go with Azeez Alshire on a couple of fronts. One, we saw some chinks in the armor last year, especially late. I don't know if it was just because he was injured. I don't know. But I don't think teams are not just gonna not try not to see, like, ooh, I wonder if we can get him in the passing game in the middle of the field, if that's something that we can explore, which is certainly not his strength. But also, Clint, I think from that perspective, that really hurt them in the playoff game last year. Also from the perspective of he is one of the big leaders on this team. And he's got to be out there on the field for them. All right. Last year, there was a lot of different thoughts of why and if he got screwed or whatever. But he put himself in a position to get suspended for multiple games down the stretch. He missed the Chiefs game. He missed the Ravens game in the playoff or in the regular season coming down the stretch. He missed big games because of not just what happened with Trevor Lawrence, but multiple decisions he'd made over his time here in the league. And I don't think they can handle that. He's a leader on this team. He's also, and I think he said it when he came back, he's got to make better decisions and put himself in a situation where he doesn't miss games to hurt the team. And I think that's extremely important, Clint, because I believe that he may be the number one player on the watch list for any kind of hits or things like that to where he could lose some games and maybe more than just getting fined. So Azeez Alshire, both on the field and his play and his leadership
and off the field in terms of how he's got to carry himself so he doesn't put himself in a position where he misses games.
Yeah, Aziz has got to be better in big moments as well. I mean, that yep. middle of the field can't be as vulnerable as it was in critical moments last year, no question about it.
Mahomes was tripping and falling.
Yeah.
And was able to hit Kelce because he was out of position.
Well, I can't have this conversation without talking Dalton Schultz. And look, I'll cut him a little bit of slack and not base this solely on how pitiful he was last year. I mean, he was a top 10 tight end in the league last year and then somehow fell completely out of the mentions. So forget that side of it. We've talked multiple times since that wide receiver list, top 10 wide receiver list came out, Nico Collins was number 8. We've kind of leaned into, boy, this team is more Nico Collins dependent than they're probably a little comfortable with. Well, with that being the case, I think Dalton Schultz, I think the pressure's on Dalton Schultz. I mean, he's got a, first of all, he's making $12 million a year. Secondly, he's a guy that you know, we've heard him and CJ Stroud talk about chemistry. We've heard him talk about cerebral players, being very smart players kind of deal. And now you're in a position where you should hand Dalton Schultz being the tight end and not being, I mean, he should never come off the field number one. Number two, he should be the number two, hands down the number two target for CJ Stroud. I would never think he'd be above Nico Collins, but being playing that position, he should be the number two guy that CJ Stroud looks for in critical
minutes. Over Kirk?
Absolutely. I mean, just simply because when you go 12 personnel or you go 21 personnel, Kirk's not going to be on the field. So, I mean, Dalton should never come off the field, and he should be the quarterback's best friend. That's how he made $12 million, being very quarterback-friendly, being dependable, being able to create a little separation. He's got to get back to that. And this offense, absolutely. Last year, you had weapons. Now, the injuries happened, and you ended up needing him a little bit more. This year, going into the season, the writing's on the wall, man. Dalton Schultz has to have a monster year this year. With or without Nico Collins, Dalton Schultz has to have a monster year this year. Now, if you lose Nico Collins, then Dalton better be in the right frame of mind. So I'm going with Dalton Schultz 10 out of 10 times on this combo.
Text line coming through. Danico Autry was a guy they looked at as a veteran. Not bad. Yeah, he was somebody who missed a lot of games too. And you didn't get a chance to see his versatility. It felt like, I mean, he had a good year and had good moments. It felt like missing them 6 right off the jump also just kind of slowed Danico Autry. But that adding to that defensive line, I get that. But kind of those other areas, those are lighter areas, you know, off-ball linebacker and tight end for this team. So get there. You can keep sending them in, any returning veterans that you're looking at that need, that you've got your eye on, ready for the upcoming season for the Texans. Coming up a little 5 o'clock fire, we have announced rotations for both Seattle and the Astros. If you are just joining us today, there'll be a weird name missing when you hear the projected rotation for the first 3 games of this series against second place Seattle. Also, money happening, record-breaking contract in the NFL, and other NFL news that is going to be a potential story with a ruling from the league, maybe suspension for another AFC contender. We'll let you know all of that coming up next.
The Drive is live.